Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This
is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder. Ooh, 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 and rock and roll. Yeah, ooh, yeah, ooh, yeah, ooh. The spell you run down, skeleton run by Chris Jericho. It's always good when you forget the lyrics to your own song. I don't care, it's my show. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride. What's that one? You know that one? That's a little bit of obscure Kiss right there. Lover All I Can from the Dress to Kill record. I was listening to it last night on the tour bus and I realized, man, that's got some fancy cowbell for yes. So I'm playing it for you, Jerichoholics. How in the hell are ya? So excited to be here talking to you from the back of the tour bus in Boston, Massachusetts. About ready to have our very first ever Fozzy show in the history of Fozzy's existence. I can't believe we haven't played Boston, such a big city, but it's okay, it's not a big college town. Having a great tour here with Theory of a Dead Man. The Boston show was last night. So today we're in New Jersey, Sayreville, the Starland Ballroom. Big, big show tonight, and then Friday, Rochester, New York. Saturday is going to be in Cleveland, Ohio, and Sunday at Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania, at the Quick Rock 45th Anniversary Party. All of those shows with Theory of a Dead Man. And then coming on November 21st, it's the Cinder Block Party Tour with Fozzy, Texas Hippie Coalition, and Shaman's Harvest. It is going to be a bash for your ass. I said that twice today. November 20th, it starts in Flint, Michigan at the Machine Shop. Goes all the way through December 12th in St. Pete at the State Theater. That's the Tampa area. Go to FozzyRock.com to find out all the information of all the shows and buy your tickets. And then, this Tuesday, coming up, it is the release of The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, my third book. Pre-order it now on Amazon, or if you're going to be in the area, New York, New Jersey, Washington State, Texas, Florida, come by and see me at my signings. Carl Place, Barnes & Noble, that's in New York City on October 14th. Ridgewood, New Jersey at Bookends, October 15th. October 16th in Staten Island at Barnes & Noble. October 17th, Lake Forest Park, Third Place Books in the Seattle area. October 18th, Fort Lewis, Fort McCord, also in the Seattle, Washington area. October 21st, Dallas, Barnes & Noble, Lincoln Park. October 23rd, Brandon, Florida, Books a Million. October 25th, Barnes & Noble in Tampa, Florida. That's at the Carrollwood location. Come on down. If you liked my first two books, you will love this third installment. I'm going to read another chapter for you on Friday's show. Until then, if you like part one, part two, go pre-order it now. Pre-orders are very important to the sales figures and to getting this book on the New York Times bestseller list for the third time in a row. Okay, today, John Morrison is going to be here talking about all his time in the WWE, from his early matches to the creation of his Shaman of Sexy gimmick to why he left the WWE in 2011. We'll also hear about some of his upcoming movie projects. He's writing and producing a movie himself, even very talented guy. He was also in a version of Hercules, not The Rock's version, another version that was released on demand and via video DVD over the summer. Also, we'll find out all about the parkour technique that he uses both in the ring and out. Very, very amazing stuff he can do. He's a natural acrobat. He's a real-life superhero. Amazing conversation with John Morrison coming up. He's going to be in the upcoming Lucha Underground show on El Rey Network. He's going to be called Johnny Mundo, which I think means world. Before we get rolling, though, I need to say thanks to all of you for doing your Amazon shopping through my links at podcast1.com. That's the easiest way to support the show. Amazon, proud sponsor of Talk is Jericho. And every time you shop at Amazon through one of my links, Amazon gives a small percentage of your purchase back to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada. Go to podcast1.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button and get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. For instance, the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War, new Theory of a Dead Man record as well, Savages. You can pre-order The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. It's coming out on October 14th. You can buy whatever you want. You want to buy a piano? You go buy it. You want to buy drapery? Go to the Amazon link and buy it. It won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or hidden charges. If you happen to be doing Amazon shopping, you can help out my show in the process. Now go to podcast1.com, click on the podcast free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Bookmark so you can get to those links in one easy click, and keep me posted on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. So many things you can do, so many amazing products you can buy. Help us out. We'll be waiting for you. We love doing this for you for free for twice a week, so don't let us down. Okay. Boston Herald did an article on me this week when I was in town with Fozzy. When I clicked on the link, I read the article, which was very well done. At the bottom, I saw this little thing that said 10 off-air WWE moments you weren't supposed to see. So I thought it'd be cool to go through those. I have not read these yet. Completely cold. Don't know if this is any good, but I thought it'd be fun. I found this at therichest.com. So number 10, the moment you weren't supposed to see. The announcers make fun of CM Punk. During this moment, fans and audiences alike were chanting the name CM Punk repeatedly following his exodus from the company. While everybody was chanting his name during a break on a live Raw show, the announcers joked about the chant, Cole and Lawler. Eventually, a video with the announcers joking about the chant surfaced on the internet and spread quickly. Wow, okay, big deal. That's not really all that crazy. Number 9, feed from Kevin Dunn's headset. Kevin Dunn, executive producer of the WWE. It's not uncommon to hear him speaking into the microphone or in the announcer's headset giving direction. One time in 2010, another satellite feed picked up Dunn's voice in his headset, and what he was saying transferred over to next night's episode of NXT. Although the audio levels were rather low, they were fairly easy to make out. Yeah, big deal. All right, Mark Henry is locked out of a cage. I remember this. When the technicians set up the WWE stage, forgot to set up a gimmick on a door to come off his hinges, Mark Henry tried everything he could to break the chain and get inside the cage. Due to excellent editing, the TV crew pulled it off to make it look like Henry broke through the cage and engaged the other wrestlers in the ring. But to the live audience, the other wrestlers in the ring had to just stand there patiently while Henry took his time to break through the cage. Ah, yes, good old Mark Henry, my old pal. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Somebody's gonna get their axe split. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, break his neck. Neck. All right, let's continue on. Number 7. Mankind picks up the Rock's glasses. Well, that was nice of him. Let's see what happened in this. Mankind and the Rock joined forces on multiple occasions, but perhaps the most memorable moment was when the Rock was cutting a promo and about to deliver some of his famous, hilarious lines. This whole part was scripted, but wasn't scripted. It was when his sunglasses came off. Mankind helpfully picked them up to give them back to him. The entire live audience clapped in applause as the Rock said, "The Rock, thanks you for that." And the Rock came back last night on The Rock Came Back. Very last night, The Rock came back. The very last night, homage to my Theory of a Dead Man buddies. Rock surprising the crowd in, at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn last night. People went nuts for it. I like it when Rock said Lana walks like she has a Smirnoff bottle jammed up her poutine. Good. All right, number 6. Daniel Puter almost breaks Kurt Angle's arm. I remember that. Daniel Puter had Kurt Angle beaten in a match. I think it was in a challenge for... Tough Enough. Angle was in a position where if he didn't tap out, his arm would be broken. I remember Daniel Puter caught him in a triangle lock, which could break your arm. It was not in the script. Angle kept fighting and pinned Puter down. Even though Puter's shoulders were not on the mat, the referee counted to 3 and gave Angle the match as planned. I remember somebody came up with a great idea of doing a shoot fight between Puter and Angle. The dumbest idea ever. Undertaker catches fire, number 5. I've discussed this on this show before. I was there. I saw a bird's eye view. I wrote a chapter about it in The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, which comes out this Tuesday. With his career reaching new heights in 2010, Undertaker's entrances has consisted of fireballs being launched from the stage. But in 2010, as he was about to defend the World Heavyweight Championship, one of the fireballs burned the Undertaker. Second one caught his coat on fire. Immediately, the Undertaker tore the coat off, ran over to the nearest water bottle, started dousing himself with them. Took nearly half an hour before the Undertaker was ready to enter the match, and one of the most memorable off-script moments in WWE history. Not really what happened, but if you want to know the whole story, you can read about it in my book. Tony Chimmel speaks bad English, and the best thing is, instead of Tony Chimmel, it's a picture of Josh Matthews, so you can tell that this website is really on the ball. While recording for an off-the-air compilation for WWE, an overdub of earlier lines that Tony Chimmel practiced played over the air on the monitors of the announcers. The practicing lines of Chimmel had him speaking very bad English, very many uhs and ums throughout the dub, not to mention referring to the WWF as the Women's Championship. This led to many other announcers throwing jokes at Chimmel, and many of them were seen laughing hard for quite some time on the air. However, Chimmel's career had already been in a more downward spiral before that, as WWE continued to have him announce more and more minor events. But after this off-air incident, minor events seemed to be the only thing Tony Chimmel has been announcing lately. Wow, an unsolicited, unfair attack on poor Tony Chimmel there. Tony's a great guy and a good announcer, so therichest.com, you can suck it. Actually, this is by J. Adriana, so J. Adriana, you can suck it. Number 3, Triple H and The Rock rehearse. Video is hard to see. The camera zoomed out far on an empty arena, or so it seems. In the video, you can make out The Rock and Triple H rehearsing a one-hour-long Iron Man match just mere hours before the Judgment Day 2000 in Kentucky. When the video of the practice is compared with the actual match that occurred just after, the two are nearly identical in terms of sequencing. Big deal. Yes, we rehearse sometimes. That's hardly something major. Number 2, The Undertaker rehearses killing Paul Bearer. Same thing. They were rehearsing the stunt later on in the night where he buried Paul Bearer in the cement. So, okay, so some people were filming videos of the guys rehearsing. But the number one moment you weren't supposed to see in WWE, Vince McMahon blows out both quads. I remember this at the Royal Rumble match in 2005. Cena and Batista were the only wrestlers still standing, but when they both knocked each other over the ropes, Vince angrily stepped in the ring and attempted to restart the match. Somehow, though, as Vince climbed over the ropes to get in the ring, he actually blew out both of his quads, falling into the middle of the ring and not being able to get back up. At first, everyone thought it was part of the match, but when McMahon called for help and couldn't get up, people saw he had actually hurt himself. Kind of what happened. Cena and Batista went over the top rope and landed on the floor at the same time. That wasn't supposed to be what has happened. I believe Cena was supposed to win, hit the floor last, but they hit the floor at the same time. Everyone was panicking, and for some reason I was sitting next to Vince and Gorilla, and I said, "Vince, you need to go to the ring and tell them to continue the match. He's like, goes, exactly, that's exactly what I'm going to damn well do. He walks through the ring. He gets in. Something happened. He caught his foot on the rope, and he fell down hard. He blew up both of his quads, and he sat in the ring barking orders as the two guys finished the match, and Cena won, or Batista. No, it was Batista that won, I believe. He went on to face Triple H at WrestleMania that year. And Vince had to sit in the ring because he couldn't move. When the match was over, Vince walked back to the gorilla position. He might have had assistance, he might not have, but he walked with two torn quads. Walked. It's pretty much impossible. It shows how crazy Vince is. Then we all had to clear the halls of the arena backstage while they carted Vince out on a stretcher because he didn't want anybody to see him on a stretcher. Came back about 2 weeks later in a wheelchair and came back about 6 weeks after that after blowing up both quads. The man is a physical freak, a physical specimen, and I'm proud to call him my boss. So there you go. All right, we got John Morrison on the way, which means I need to fuel up and get some extra calories so he can teach me some of these parkour moves.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Talk is Jericho.
Talking to you live from Podcast One Studios in lovely Beverly Hills, where there's no locks on the bathroom.
So first thing I said when I walked in. Yeah. Probably don't even know who this is yet. But.
John Morrison is here, and he's sitting across the table.
Bathroom downstairs, and I'm up here joining Chris Jericho. Is there a name for this podcast?
Yes, dude. It's not just called Podcast.
I know it's not Podcast.
It's called Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho.
Yes, there we go. The illustrious Talk is Jericho.
Is that part of the title? Or
yes, the illustrious.
The illustrious Talk is Jericho.
You have to say that whenever you're in here. And I have the illustrious John Morrison. Man, it's good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been way too long, man.
I know.
Been running around Hollywood doing the Hollywood shuffle, as I would call it.
So you mentioned to me that your office is just down the road. Like, what kind of an office do you have? John Morrison Enterprises?
Well, anyone can get an office, you know?
But why? Just to say you have one? To give chicks your card and say, here's my office?
Well, like, I wanted to get an office so I could have a place on a studio lot to drink rum and smoke cigars.
Smart.
Obviously.
Smart. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of that.
Uh-huh. Perfect.
No. And I got the office to produce movies. So I've been working on a movie called Boone the Bounty Hunter for
the last year and a half. Producing them?
For Boone specifically, yeah. This is going to be written, produced by, and starring former WWE superstar John Morrison.
That's pretty cool.
Or the illustrious John Morrison.
That's my gimmick.
Yeah, no, but you let me borrow it.
Okay, you can borrow it for sure, because you're a producer. So how do you start becoming a producer, and why did you decide to go that route?
I mean, to become a producer, really, you just have to pay for an office.
There you go, and write on your card.
Step one.
Yeah, boom. Done.
Yeah, and business card that says producer.
That's right.
Done.
And office. Business producer with office.
You can only imagine how many panties that
yeah, drop. Yeah, it's a panty dropper. Exactly. Yeah, as if your hair and face wasn't enough, the card really fits.
The backup is the business card.
That's right.
So basically, I got into producing because I was before I even started Tough Enough, I was a film major at UC Davis.
Oh, okay.
I graduated in film from UC Davis a week before I left to do Tough Enough 3. Mm. And I did a couple of shorts. Most of them were kung fu related in college. And right before I left for Tough Enough, I finished a feature that I wrote, co-directed, produced, and starred in college. This was like 12 years ago. And it's not even good enough to show people because mm-hmm. It's like so bad that it's not good. It's just
so bad that it's not good.
Yeah, you can't hear it. You can't laugh at it. But
but it's a learning experience, right?
Exactly. So that's what was going to be my career trajectory before I started wrestling. I was training to do action I was training to be like Jackie Chan, basically. Mm. And then when I saw Tough Enough, I got back into wrestling because it was my first love as a kid. I just never really considered it like a possibility for a career, just because of the.
It seemed like so impossible. Like, how do you get into that?
Exactly. You know? Like, there's such a wall between like me, like a kid growing up in Palos Verdes, and what I saw on TV that it just mm-hmm. didn't click until I saw the Tough Enough, and then I realized like, oh, like everything I've been doing is kind of prepping me for pro wrestling. It's,
yeah,
I just
yeah.
never thought about that.
To take some of those techniques that you had and use them in pro wrestling. So you said you wanted to be Jackie Chan. So have you been kind of studying and training, I guess, martial arts your whole life?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times describe pro wrestling as a martial art. You probably, I mean,
it's art. Absolutely. I agree.
Would know. It's like a discipline. It's like a practice mm-hmm. like that a doctor does. You constantly improve. You learn new techniques. The object is to entertain people.
Right.
But physically you can do that vocally, emotionally. And, I was a wrestler in high school and college, and then in college I started doing gymnastics and kung fu and breakdancing with the thought that I wanted to get into action movies. And so since I left, I've been doing the same thing. I've been training, doing a lot of stunt fighting, still training parkour, still taking wrestling bookings. I've done 5 movies now, and Boone the Bounty Hunter pretty much envelops like the exact character that I want to play. And so I wrote a script based on this narcissistic bounty hunter who does parkour to catch his bounties. He's a reality show bounty hunter. And then the film really thematically is kind of about identity, which is mm-hmm. a theme that I've run into a lot with pro wrestling. A lot of people play the same character so much that their personality and their character on TV sometimes overlap.
Right.
So Boone the Bounty Hunter thematically explores that, but also is a premise for the type of action I want to do.
So
parkour, over the top, fun stuff.
And it's an actual feature film, or is it a web series?
It's a feature.
So how do you go, let's say, and even to raise the money for that? Is it your money, or do you have to go find somebody?
It's one or the other. that's the hard thing. I mean, and like we were talking earlier before we went on the air about like how full of shit everyone in Hollywood is.
Yeah, well, yeah. Entertainment, I mean, man.
It's entertainment in general, and it's not like even necessarily a bad thing. It's just people like to make stuff happen, and they promise stuff, and a lot of times
with the best of intentions. Sometimes, like they're
exactly.
hoping so hard that it works, right?
Yeah, and then like, but a lot of times it doesn't work, and people promise stuff even if there's a 20% chance of it
yes.
happening, and so like. Really, literally, you take a lot of meetings, you start attaching talent, you start trying to ask people if they're available to do cameos in your movie. Oh, hey, by the way.
Smooth. Very smooth, man. That was nice. I'm in.
And then you make a... There's a couple different things you can do. One, you can make a sizzle trailer, which mm-hmm. which I did for Boone. I saw that.
I saw it.
Oh, you did? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Somebody sent it to me. You had the shades on, like the hair blowing, and like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can take that to a film market like they have in Los Angeles. They have one called AFM. It's in November. I went with Boone and on an iPad and walked around and showed it to distributors.
So you just go up to them and show them?
You make appointments usually, but like because I'm John Morrison, a lot of times I just like walked into places
and just hopefully put one of your promo shots on the desk and go, can you hold this for a second?
Introduced myself. And like if you have a fun action trailer with music, you're a couple steps ahead of the game.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know,
there's
and, like,
probably a lot of just cheap people, like cheap shows that people think is good.
There's a lot of crappy movies
yeah.
out there. And I think it's refreshing to have somebody walk in with an action movie, one, because like a lot of people want action movies these days. And two, just like if you walk into a room and you bring cool energy and a lot of times you know somebody who's an acquaintance of like the distributor you're walking into, which is what's kind of started happening for me. Like I knew somebody who knew somebody at Voltage and at Shoreline, at Anchor Bay, at Shoreline. So a lot of the places I could say like, hey, I'm Elizabeth's friend's friend
mm-hmm.
and like play the like who do you know game. And then,
right.
Oh, check out the sizzle trailer. And then, you know, usually they watch it and say they love it and they'd love to give you money if this and this happens. And then you connect those dots and figure it out.
So, is this something that's kind of it's ongoing, it's going to happen, or are you still kind of working on trying to make it happen?
I would say it's ongoing, it's going to happen. I mean, Boone's pretty close. We've got a script locked. We've got like locations that we're locking up. We've got director and cast attached. I mean, this is happening. Like
you got this far.
Yeah, it's like going to happen pretty much no matter what. We got partial financing in the account.
Right.
It's
and this is
close.
A script that you wrote.
I would have to say co-wrote.
Okay,
but it's created by
an
me,
idea.
Developed by me, and literally like written by me and then rewritten by someone else, and then rewritten again by me because I like myself better.
You want to put your name higher up on the list.
Exactly.
And what about the Hercules?
This is the year of the Hercules.
There's a lot of Herculeses,
yeah,
right?
I mean, Kellan Lutz had a Hercules movie come out in January, mm-hmm. and a lot of people haven't heard of my Hercules movie. Hopefully some people will go to my movie thinking it's The Rock's, but I don't know about the other way around. To be honest.
Hey, come on, man.
And also, I think that, The Rock's is like a theatrical movie, like a blockbuster movie. Mm. I don't think that the Hercules movie I did is getting a theatrical release.
So it'd be like a video on demand?
It'd probably be video on demand or straight to DVD. It'd probably be big in Japan.
Huge in the Orient. Now, were you actually Hercules?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I played Hercules in Asylum's Hercules movie. And it was fun, man. It was a low-budget thing. It was a collaboration from a lot of filmmakers, mm-hmm. and there wasn't a ton of prep time. And I've learned the difference now between, like, your Captain America versus your low-budget Hercules movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I've been training with a ton of stunt guys, and say like Chris Brewster, for example, who doubled Captain America, and Aaron Tony, who doubled Anthony Mackie. Like, those guys are employed for, like, a full year, pre-vising and working on fight scenes, getting prepped for Captain America. Hercules, when I flew to Morocco, we shot this thing in Morocco.
Wow.
We get there, and there's a couple stunt guys who don't speak English. There's a coordinator who speaks French. And then there's Moroccan extras who don't speak English
or French.
Yeah. And they speak like some form of Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're super helpful, but the amount of time we have is like very little. And there was a couple days where we worked out fight scenes with some of the stunt guys who were like cool and like down to do stuff. They're down to let me like powerbomb them and throw them around. Uh-huh. And then we'd get on a set and those guys weren't there. And there's just like a bunch of Moroccan extras like staring at me with like deer in the headlights expressions. And they just ask me to kill everybody. And I'm swinging swords and like kicking these guys and like slamming them around. And like they made like a cool movie out of like the resources we had. I think the accomplishment of putting it together was pretty cool.
It's still pretty cool that you were the lead in a movie, man. I mean, that's huge. Did you have to audition for that, or did you just get offered the part?
I actually just got offered it, which is pretty cool. I had auditioned for those guys once before, and I always get this like you're perfect. Loved your audition. Like you're too big and your hair's too long.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Hercules came up, they were just like, oh, perfect.
Bingo.
Done. Yeah.
The role you were born to play.
Exactly.
How long were you in Morocco for?
Only 3 weeks.
Wow. So yeah. It was a guerrilla filmmaking.
Very quick and dirty. Quick and dirty Hercules.
Did you have any like monsters that you had to fight?
I don't think we could afford monsters.
CGI Sci-Fi Channel monsters?
They had me punch a horse, though.
Okay.
Which was like it reminded me of Blazing Saddles.
It was, yeah, our homage to Conan. Didn't he punch a horse or a cow or something?
Exactly. He knocked out he was a horse or a bull or something.
Yeah. So they might actually put it on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
Which in which case they would have to edit in some of their awesome Sci-Fi Channel monsters.
If they did that, that would be great.
That'd be the best.
I would love to do like a Hercules movie where it's like Hercules versus creatures. You know what I mean?
A series.
Yeah.
Now that it's the role you were born to play.
Absolutely.
And you're a producer and you have an office, you could probably make this happen.
Just, yeah, sip some rum, light up a cigar, make some phone calls.
So how long has it been since you left the WWE? 2010, did you leave?
The very end of 2011.
11, okay.
Like December 2011. So, man, it's been two and a half years.
It's crazy.
Dude,
how quickly
flies,
it goes, right?
Like,
I know.
When I left for like, in my head, I was like, I'll take a year. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll take a year, I'll heal up, I'll do some projects, and I'll come back. And then you start thinking about, I mean, you've been in this space longer than I have, like probably thinking, all right, I'll go back, and then thinking about that schedule, mm-hmm. and thinking about like for you, I mean, Fozzy and movies and like your web show, same. Like I've got like a slate of stuff that
yes.
I want to do, and the more I think about going back, like the more stuff I have to like not do that I want to do.
Well, you know, it's one of those things too, and you might be the first guy I've had on, well, Chavo too, but when you leave the business, especially WWE, you don't realize how quickly things move, how stressful it is, how much traveling you're doing, how lack of sleep you have. It's actually it's crazy. When you're there, you can't see the forest through the trees.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, 100%.
You know, and even like the mental. I mean, physically the matches are fine, but mentally, like you're always having to ask questions or worry about politics or, you know, trying to figure out different ways of doing something that you don't like. It's really taxing.
And it's pretty much all you have energy for.
Yeah.
It's all consuming.
That's right.
And yeah, I would describe it the same way. I describe it as like an express train. Like you get on the express train and you just blow by like all these stops that are probably pretty cool, but you don't even have time to think about it.
That's right. It happens
so
fast.
You step off that train and like 5 years, 10 years have gone by.
Well, people will say things like even with us. I can't remember right before I left in 2012 or 2010, the last match I had was with you or one of them. I don't even remember.
Was, right?
I don't even remember. I remember vaguely.
Before you left, you had to put over that goddamn John Morrison.
I remember you did.
And we did that. Like we did a really funny
tape in Washington.
That was your idea where like, you put me over and then I sat down next to you and,
something was going on. Yeah, I wanted you to be like The Office, where you'd be Jim, where it's just all done with facial expressions and like
right,
you know, like uncomfortable silence.
That was a cool idea, and I got a lot of good feedback off.
Yeah, I actually pitched that to Brian Gewirtz, one of the writers at the WWE, maybe even the head writer. You should make Morrison like Jim from The Office, where it's not what he says, it's what he doesn't say, and kind of the reactions and the kind of the, like tough day, huh? You know, just that uncomfortable silence. But, you know,
it came out on that thing and
it was great.
It's like the first episode of a sitcom, though, you know, like the idea is there. And if you develop it, like it starts to gain
momentum.
You
can make it roll.
Get it. Yeah.
But also, too, somebody would have to get what it is that we were trying to go for. And because it was like I kind of had this idea, you know, maybe it wouldn't work with other people or whatever. I'm not sure. But I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, dude, I thought so, too. Yeah, they have to get it and then follow through with it enough so that everyone starts to get it and latch on.
What were your reasons for leaving?
You know, honestly, there's some physical stuff. Like I had neck surgery, 2011 earlier, and I had like nerve damage, and I rushed back. And when I got back, I remember like I kept getting calls from the office, like Johnny and Laurinaitis and like Hunter. Everybody wanted me back ASAP, and I rushed back even before I was ready. And when I got back, like I remember thinking, like you know, like. I'm still getting stingers and like I feel like I have nerve damage. My neck is like when I move my head around, I feel like I'm cracking my knuckles in my neck. And I got back and I remember thinking, you know what? Like I rushed back and like nothing's changed. Like nothing would have mattered.
Wow.
If I came back like a month earlier or 3 months later or a year later, it would have just been
it's the same thing.
Kind of the same thing. And then when I left, I started thinking about all the other stuff that I'd wanted to do. And thinking, you know, like if I re-sign my contract, they wanted me to sign for 5 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, man, 5 years from now, I'm going to like be 5 years older.
That's a long time.
And I'm not going to be in the kind of shape I am now. I might not be able to move like I can when I'm in my prime. And I figured like if I was going to try to really do an action movie the way that I wanted to do, that I dreamed of when I was a kid, the time was now.
You know, when we're talking about the last that match that we had over the last year and a half or 2 years, I mean, you always were very acrobatic in the ring. You could always do a lot of cool stuff, but you really got into the parkour type thing.
That's how they say it in France, by the way. Parkour
or Canada.
That's right, Canada.
Yeah, you really got into that over the last year and a half, where that became like, I remember backstage, you'd be doing the little jumps and dives and through the hoops and doing the real Jackie Chan stuff.
You know what? And part of it was because like I had already kind of started setting my mind on like wanting to like it's like, you know, everyone has a bucket list. Now, my bucket list was do a Jackie Chan movie, but play the part of Jackie Chan. So I'd started thinking that way and applying it to wrestling and like forcing myself on that schedule. Like we'd have our, you know, like our 5 days on the road. And then on my day off, I would go to a parkour gym and train and like pick up some stuff. But if you're only training one day a week, like you can't really get better at anything. So I just figured out a way to make it work on the road.
Now, had you done that before though? Like had you been into parkour before you got into wrestling?
Not really. I mean, parkour was like a relatively new phenomenon.
No, Jackie Chan doesn't do parkour. He's like Chinese acrobat or something.
Yeah,
right?
But like it's almost like you could say that he did parkour before the term parkour was coined.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing that stuff in like in the 80s and 90s in his action movies.
He was parkour before parkour was cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Ahead of his time.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
he was still popular.
Well, explain exactly what that is, what parkour is.
Man, parkour, like traditionalists who call it parkour, differentiate it from free running. So traditional parkour, like the French way of thinking, the way that David Bell, one of the godfathers of parkour, would describe it is moving through space as efficiently as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Getting from point A to point B in the way that like a fireman might need to go to save someone from a burning building.
Mm-hmm.
Or to navigate your way through a military obstacle course. Mm-hmm. Now, like, the last 5 years, it's blown up. And, like, now parkour has become, like, kind of like a fusion of traditional parkour, gymnastics, martial arts, tricking, breakdancing, hip-hop. Pretty much all things movement are now thrown into this big catch-all term called parkour or free running. And really, it's just, like, navigating, moving through space in a cool way, which is super interesting to me, especially as it applies to film and like chase scenes. And that first chase scene in that James Bond
movie. I was going
to
say that was a Casino Royale, I think, right?
Yeah,
that absolutely. Was amazing. I was thinking about you when I watched it because I just saw it about 6 months ago, and the whole thing is based around Bond chasing a parkour expert, right?
I think that specific movie and chase scene had a lot to do with parkour gaining the momentum and popularity that it has now. And since then, I mean, I did a video called the Tempest Takeover video with a – they do this – like Tempest Free Running Academy does these videos like once a year, and they fly in like all the best parkour athletes from all over the world. And the stuff that these guys are doing, it's like they were like defying gravity and like risking their lives doing like precision jumps and corkscrew gainers like from bars to bars, like elevated 12 feet in the air with like no padding. And after I saw that, I was kind of like, well, I'll just talk at the beginning of this thing.
Yeah, it's real hardcore stuff.
Yeah, but it's like the stuff that I can do is just like – it's like it happened with skateboarding and BMX bike riding. It's like you can't just do it. You can't just do an ollie. You have to do a kickflip. And then you can't just do a kickflip. You have to do like a kickflip over a shopping cart. And then you have to do like a kickflip over a shopping cart onto like – burning like front yard or something.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what's happening now with parkour, in my opinion. Like the level of talent is just so elevated because people have had longer to develop tricks, and people get different specialties. Like someone like a precision guy, where they're really good at jumping from a far distance onto like a small target, like jumping from this window down to like a rail, like a story below,
and landing completely
specifically
on it.
Yeah. On the rail. Is somebody like a tricker? They're like good at martial arts tricks. They can do crazy like twisting moves. Is somebody like a speed guy? Like everyone's got different kinds of specialties, and it's a crazy world.
We were talking about the backstage bit. I specifically remember one of them where you did kind of that James Bond Casino Royale. You jumped over a couple pallets of what they had set up an obstacle course, and did they do that quite a bit? Like, were they getting behind the concept? Did Vince understand what it was you were doing?
Honestly, I don't think Vince understood it, but he liked it.
Yeah, because it's cool looking, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, and they kind of it was another frustrating thing a little bit. Like they got behind it and they loved it, and every week they told me how much they loved it and they wanted to do a parkour vignette every week.
Mm-hmm.
But then we really did it like once a month because they would run out of time, and then I would like you know like you do like would go to Vince's office and push and talk to him about it, and he would tell a writer somewhere that we had to do the parkour vignette this week. But then sometimes if they come up to you at 6:30 when you're trying to like put a match together, and they're like, all right, we gotta do this parkour thing. And you're like,
it's not quite that easy.
Yeah.
But in the WWE world, well, come on, just do it, parkour.
What are you doing? There's some boxes over there.
Just jump over there.
Rail up upstairs.
But it wasn't really something that you could incorporate into a wrestling match, was it?
Towards the end, I was getting some more like freedom to do like a lot of those false count anywhere matches.
Oh yeah,
and then I felt like it had a really
good
home.
That's right. You and Sheamus had a great one. Was that right?
Yeah, yeah. Me and Sheamus had a great one, and I had a good one with Miz.
Miz too. Yeah, I remember that. That was like a main event of Raw, maybe.
Yeah, that was back when Miz was the WWE champion.
Crazy, right?
It's bizarre.
Things have changed. Because I remember even that match that we had. You did some kind of a really cool dive where you jumped completely over, like you're in the ring and jumped over the corner.
Yeah,
and did some kind of
corner to corner dive. Actually, I think
that was really cool.
That was the first time I did that.
Yeah.
And I almost missed it, too.
Yeah, I remember like, okay, I'll be there.
You had to save me.
Yeah, I'll be the guy.
You stepped forward.
Absolutely. But that one you did with Miz and Sheamus, they were both kind of false count anywhere, and you did some great stuff. I mean, that was kind of a breakthrough, both those matches for you. Was the Sheamus on a pay-per-view?
I think Sheamus one was on Raw, and then I had a ladder match with him on pay-per-view that like I did some parkour stuff in, too.
So that was like I said, almost a breakout moment for you.
Absolutely. That and the Royal Rumble spot was a parkour spot.
Which one was
like
that?
I got knocked off the apron and jumped onto the rail. And then
that's right.
In. And I think that was one of the first times where I really started putting parkour into the wrestling thing.
That was amazing. For people that didn't see it or maybe you don't remember, he was standing on the apron. Somebody hit you from behind. You jumped completely across the open aisleway onto the guardrail and stuck it.
Yeah.
Like a cat.
It was pretty funny because that was one of those spots for me where I was like, well, if I miss it, I guess I'm
you're
just
out.
Out. Yeah.
Have you seen Kofi over the last little bit? He does something like that every time.
I text him usually after every rumble. Son of a bitch.
He comes up with something every time.
He's good, man. He's those things that he comes up with every time I see him, like it's some of my favorite rumble moments now.
Very creative. And it's almost expected. Actually, even at WrestleMania.
The thing that happens though is like now he's gotta up himself every year.
Did you see Mania this year?
Yeah.
Where he get pushed off the corner and he landed with his feet on the stairs, so he officially wasn't out of the Battle Royal, and then climbed back up. That's crazy. Landing on the stairs, like
the margin of error. Yeah,
that's insane. Yeah, exactly.
It could go so wrong.
Did you work with him at all with Kofi?
Yeah. I had when I first started, we had actually Kofi's first like round of like house shows.
Uh-huh.
It was Johnny Nitro versus Kofi Kingston, and it was a freaking spot fest.
I'm sure it was. I want to talk all about Johnny Nitro. We're first going to take a break. We got John Morrison here, right here on the illustrious Talk is Jericho.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho.
Welcome back to Talk is Jericho. I got John Morrison right here. Was it the Shaman of Sexy?
The Guru of Greatness.
What else?
Monday Night Delight. The Honcho of Hotness. The Ambassador of Abdominals. You know, stuff that you think of when you're driving from city
to
city.
Just rolls off your tongue. The Honcho of Hotness.
That was heel John Morrison.
Now let's talk about the early years. You mentioned before that you were kind of involved in producing and acting, and then you noticed that Tough Enough was existing, and you thought maybe you'd try to get into wrestling. Where did you find out about Tough Enough, and how did you get involved with it?
I was in between classes. I just started watching it on TV. Like I was.
This is when they had Tough Enough on TV, like the actual program Tough Enough.
Yeah, like okay. Tough Enough season one. Like
right.
I started watching halfway through the season, and I literally started thinking like, this is it. This is the guys that are going to be training to be pro wrestlers.
Yeah,
dude, I could school these guys.
And was that Nowinski?
That was Maven Nowinski and right. Josh Matthews' year.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And you always think that when you watch TV.
Oh, I could do that.
Yeah, exactly. Guys, yeah. It looks easier when you're sitting on your couch.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you get in the ring, it's nuts.
It's a whole different world.
Yeah.
So you saw one, and then two, I think the girls won. It was like the
two I applied for.
Okay.
Like, I applied for, and I was like a semifinalist. I went to Vegas. I met Chavo and Kevin Dunn, and like Kevin Dunn said, like, he doesn't want to be a pro wrestler. He just wants to flip and run and do gymnastics. And then I reapplied for three and ended up getting on. Which is perfect because I got to finish college.
And so what exactly did that entail, getting on to Tough Enough? Tell us about how that you have to go to a house. I can't remember exactly how it went.
Yeah, it's like an old school
real
reality
world, right?
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a real world type thing.
Is
like,
this the one where Bob Hawley and was it DeMott?
Yeah,
it was?
Bob Hawley beat up Matt Capitelli
on
my season, and we were all like we were all whining like
because
like
Bob was miserable, man. He was mean.
And I found out later, yeah, he was a mean dude. And when he came onto our show, he had a broken neck.
Oh,
so not only was like is he like kind of a grumpy guy sometimes, like he had a reason to be.
He's
pretty
literally hurting. I think that's pissed. Brock Lesnar. I think power bombed him or something.
Yeah,
his neck, right?
I think it was like weeks after that before he got the surgery. In the meantime,
wow. So what happened with Capitelli?
Dude, Cap,
he was
like,
another. He was another.
He was
student
like,
in the
I think
class.
One of like the most charismatic, like talented guys ever. But that
good-looking guy.
Yeah, and like different looking too.
Yeah,
like, he had like crazy hair and like
Sammy
kind
Hagar
of like a,
hair. Yeah,
like cool style.
Yeah,
he had like the worst luck ever though. Like he kept about like the first time he's about to be called up, he took a hip toss and like broke his leg in like a spot show in Ulitic, Indiana or something. Then like they're gonna put him and Kaelin Croft or Chris Cage, mm-hmm. whatever people know
whichever
him
nomenclature.
As.
The guy who got left in Switzerland when we took that bus ride,
yeah.
Which we'll talk about.
And he ended up telling me later that was the best thing that ever happened to him.
I'll tell you it was the best thing that ever happened to
yeah.
him.
Yeah. Okay.
Remember how bad that – but let's talk about it. So we're over on tour, and I'll still remember – I wrote it in my next book that's coming out in October. And we, you and I, nice. October 14th.
Where can I get that?
Yeah, available at bookstores.
Everywhere.
Near,
okay, fine bookstores. Good.
If they still exist. So we were over there, and there was when the Icelandic volcanoes happened, where all this ash got
and
shot into the air.
All the flights were grounded.
All the flights were grounded.
The particles were going to get in the engines.
Yeah, exactly. It was bad. Everything was under lockdown. And the Raw crew was in Ireland, so they were stuck on an island, and right. We were on mainland Europe.
We were somewhere, in Switzerland.
We were in Switzerland. You and I were going to go snowboarding the next day in Innsbruck, Austria.
Dude, I forgot about
Remember
that.
Remember that?
That was going to be like the
most plan.
Epic part of the tour.
We were super excited because we were going to go snowboarding
in Innsbruck.
You almost
never get to do anything fun on those wrestling tours. Wrestling's fun.
But I get it. Yeah, outside of that. And we had a show in Innsbruck, so it's right in the Swiss Alps. That's where the Olympics were, Winter Olympics, whatever, 10 years ago. And I was like, dude, because you always used to go you'd go surfing in Costa Rica. You'd go find cool stuff to do.
I tried to towards the end, make a point of if we're going somewhere, I'm going to make a point of going jet skiing even if I can't sleep. Or surfing or something.
Enjoy this tour.
Yeah.
And so we were going to go and we had it all organized. I remember I even talked to one of our reps and they had going to have a shuttle pick us up at the hotel, drive us. We were going to rent boards and go for half a day and then come back.
Volcano exploded one day later.
I know. Yeah. And then so we had to leave right after the show and drive from Zurich to Madrid, which was, I don't know, 2,500 miles or something. 2,500 kilometers.
In that crappy van.
Well, what happened was is that we had to make it to Madrid to fly out because Raw was on Monday. The Raw crew was stuck in Ireland, and this is still when they had split the Raw and SmackDown crews.
Right.
So we would have to take over for Raw, and we could make it to Madrid, but we'd have to drive all night to get there. It was going to take about 24 hours.
They were trying to rent us luxury vehicles, like a tour bus. Everything's completely rented out. Everyone's doing the same thing.
That's right. And we basically had – it was supposed to be a 12 or 15-hour drive. We basically had a glorified rent-a-car shuttle.
Yeah.
That's what it
and
was.
And it wasn't even a good one. AC didn't work.
This isn't even an Avis shuttle. This is a United or a National
Thrifty.
That's it.
Your off airport rental car shuttle.
And there was no air conditioning. There was no bathroom. There was no food. There was nothing.
And like flooring that thing, its top speed was 50, 55 miles an hour.
Yes. And at one point, the driver actually crossed himself. You're oh my God, we're going to die.
Yeah.
And I remember weird.
Just 'cause he thought the engine was going to blow up.
We're going to stuck in the mountains. It's going to be the Donner Party. We're going to eat each other alive. We're going to be cannibals. So anyways, that was – I remember the fact that we finally made it, but it took us 20 hours. It was the worst ever. But the thing that bothers me the most is that we didn't get to go snowboarding in Innsbruck.
Absolutely.
So
– it would have been so legendary.
I know. It would have been amazing, right?
No, and literally at the time when we were leaving, to bring it back to Galen Croft and those guys, when we were getting onto the shuttle, I remember there was all right, well – We need you 10 for Raw. Croft, Beretta, not you.
It was the lifeboat on the Titanic. Only the most important people could get on.
Yeah, and then it ended up being where the people that didn't get onto the lifeboat. I mean, those guys hung out in Geneva for a week.
A week.
They both met girls.
I know.
They both hung out.
And the Raw crew was stuck in Ireland. I remember Johnny's, they're stranded in Ireland. They're stranded in Belfast in a 5-star hotel,
at the Hilton,
drinking and watching movies and hanging. I don't want to hear it. So you had Kalen Croft and Capitelli. We're talking about the bad luck that Capitelli had.
Yeah. So he was about to get called up. He got a concussion on OVW TV. They took him and they gave him a CAT scan just to be safe. And they found out that he had a golf ball sized malignant tumor in his head. And he's fine now. But at the time, it was a really big deal. It was by his optic nerve. They told him that they needed to take it out. And when he woke up from surgery, there was a 20% chance he could be deaf and a 45% chance he could be blind.
Wow.
And they took it out. He woke up and he was totally fine, except he lost some of his periph.
Okay.
He said it's he's wearing a hat all the time. He just see up.
But, so he couldn't wrestle anymore.
Well, I think that – and it was just the tumor was the size of a golf ball and they took it out of his head and they just didn't want him –
yeah, getting bounced around.
Him.
Sure,
yeah,
sure, sure,
you
sure.
Got a hole in your head.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
So that was it. And it's kind of too bad. He's in Louisville now. Still, he's managing a couple gyms out there.
Okay.
He's married, and that dude is still one of the most positive people in my life. Every time I talk to him, he's having a great day. He's got some funny story. He would have been great. If he'd got his shot on TV for sure.
Yeah. Well, because I remember that they brought you and him up to Raw and Tommy Dreamer beat you guys up with canes or something like that and sent you packing back down to the minor leagues? Like what the hell, right? Like stupid old school wrestling where these guys obviously made it through tough enough. Now we must destroy them.
Yeah, let's capitalize.
Yeah, let's capitalize try, let's on
the
kill them.
Publicity. Kendo stick.
And the thing is, they did this with Maven too. Tough enough people were watching, and I felt that you guys were kind of growing up in front of the fans. So when you guys won, you were there. People like they had a say in bringing you in, and then you just got destroyed. Happened to Maven too, just killed you off.
When I was like a huge fan of wrestling, but also Tough Enough. And I remember like specifically like I was tuning in for like months to see Maven on like WWE programming and like nothing. And then he eventually showed up and did well for himself.
Yeah,
but they like I didn't care by the time he showed up, but I just cared less.
The bloom was off the rose. The momentum had been stopped.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's just the way things were then. Back it was like, you know, I guess 2004 when you finally debuted. I remember this. You came in as Eric Bischoff's.
How could you forget
Eric Bischoff's nephew or something like that?
Slippery shoes, Johnny Nitro.
First of all, and this is something that Stacy, my amazing producer, pulled up. You start off as Johnny Blaze.
Yeah.
And then it changed to Johnny Spade and then to Johnny Nitro all like in a 3-week period.
I wanted to be Johnny Blaze.
Okay.
So I told everyone my name was Johnny Blaze and I was Johnny Blaze. Like I did a vignette with Stone Cold where he's like, Johnny Blaze, nice to meet you. Then they got a cease and desist immediately from Ghost Rider and Method Man. Everybody, it was copywritten.
Okay.
Then they're like, well, you know, Johnny Spade is kind of like Johnny Ace. Let's do that. Which
just a joke, yeah. Just an in joke for like mildly funny on Johnny Ace.
Right. And then so then that was 1 week they changed my name to Johnny Spade, no explanation. And then the week after that they changed it to which I liked a lot more, Johnny Nitro. To in honor of Eric Bischoff.
Right, to fit in with Bischoff, yeah. And it's funny because you had to wear dress pants and slippery shoes.
Yeah.
Like dress shoes.
Yeah, and it was so weird because at the time, like, all I wanted to do was wrestle. And then now I'm on Monday Night Raw and I'm sitting in an office with Eric Bischoff all day.
And I remember you had to go to the top rope for like your finishers, twisty thing, and you slip because your damn shoes are too slippery.
You're talking about the one match, like the one match we had, it was like me and Eugene versus you and me and Lance Cade versus you and Eugene.
Really?
Yes.
I don't have any memory of that at all. Was that in England?
That was in England, the time when I slipped and I cut your face open.
Yeah, I get stitches because of you, man. Yeah. I had to go to some crazy old school doctor in a white coat in the middle of like Hull, England.
It was like
you'll give me some stitches, but we don't have any antiseptic, so you just go to Green and Barrett. Whatever the hell. I'm like, Johnny Blaze, Spade, Nitro, I hate you, because you'd been there for like 2 weeks.
It was not a proud moment for Johnny Nitro. Like, I slipped off the rope with my shoes, and then, like, I missed, like, the finish. And then all I had to do was make a save, and I, like, slipped and, like, caught you with, like, the point of my elbow.
Yeah, you made the save by elbowing me with your point of your elbow right in my eye.
Split you open.
Split me right open. And it was, like, I remember it was right in the middle of I'd be getting cut open by Van Damme, like, on a weekly basis. And then you came out. There's like, does anybody know how to work around here?
Yeah, you're like, it's supposed to be just, like, a fun match with Eugene.
Yeah.
He's doing airplane spins.
And I have to go deal with Dr. Jekyll. To put some stitches in my head. But so you came in as Johnny Nitro. When was the transition to John Morrison?
Vince didn't like Nitro.
Yeah.
Like
it was a gimmick.
He said it a couple times. I actually think he just thought it reminded him of WCW.
Yeah.
Whether he admitted it or not.
You're probably right.
He said like to me maybe 3 or 4 times, like, I don't like that name Nitro. I think you need a real name. Yeah. And there was like 2 times where he said that, and I was like, I don't know. And Nitro's like established. I kind of like it. And then when I ended up becoming ECW champion, I think the week before that, he said like, you got to change that Nitro name. And I was ECW champion, and I was like, all right, yeah, let's change the freaking name, whatever. Whatever we need to do.
How did you like that? That's when the ECW was its own separate entity, right? And you got moved over to the ECW crew?
I loved it. Like, because for me, at the spot I was in, right, like, before that, I was just kind of like floating around the mid-card. Mm-hmm. And like, I was kind of on a decline. And getting moved to ECW, like, I like instantly like became one of the stars of the show and a main part of the show, and I felt like I was like a top guy of ECW, mm-hmm. which I think was a better experience for me to be like you know, to be like the champion of a show, to be the top guy of a show was way better than it would have been to be on Raw or SmackDown at
just
the time.
Just in the middle,
would
right?
I, yeah, yeah. Would have just been like in, floating around in the middle.
It was a good confidence booster.
Yeah, I got a promo every week. I had like this 15 minutes of fame gimmick where I'd crush a local guy every week, like kick someone in the balls and pin them, whatever. and then got to have like 2-segment matches with Nunzio. Who wouldn't want that?
You can get Nunzio. The best about Nunzio is super paranoid.
Yeah.
So you can say, "Have you heard the news, Nunzio?" Whoa, what's the news? What's the news? And you'll hear about it later. Like he'd be like, "What? Am I getting fired? What's going on? Tell me. What's going on? What's the news? What's the bad news?"
You could just say the news and then not tell me the news.
Who else did you work with there? Who else is on that crew?
Boogeyman.
Wow.
Boogeyman was there. Punk. Actually, Punk, and I wrestled Punk on like 4 pay per views in a row, and it was like heel John Morrison. And versus babyface CM Punk at the time.
Yeah.
And I want to say we did a full program for 4 months where we'd wrestle every other TV and then build up to a pay-per-view match. And I would retain. And they decided to switch the title to him. But so, Dreamer, actually, I wrestled Dreamer a lot then too.
Did you wrestle with Benoit? Did you have to replace Benoit?
I replaced Benoit.
The weekend that the tragedy happened?
The week he no-showed.
Yeah.
The week he no-showed, I was at the pay-per-view. And me and Kevin Thorne were both sitting in Johnny's office with Carano.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wondering where Benoit was.
Mm-hmm.
And both of us were kind of looking at each other, sizing each other up, saying we're on the ECW roster.
He doesn't show up.
If he no-shows, we'll do it, or he'll do it, or I'll do it. And it was a title shot. It was going to be Benoit versus Punk.
And Punk was the champ, or Benoit was?
It was, I think neither was the champ.
Oh, okay.
There was a vacant title.
Tournament or something, yeah.
And they wanted to, and then basically they didn't want to sub out me for Benoit and let the fans down by having Punk win.
Uh-huh.
So they put me in as an alternate and then had me win to make it mean more. So
is that the first time you became ECW champion?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big turning point.
Yeah. See, that's the thing about this business. It's happened to me a few times when somebody, gets hurt or takes themselves out or doesn't show up. You got to be ready at all times. You never know.
Right. And then you're there, you capitalize, and everything,
kind of took you to the next
everything
level.
Everything changes for you, yeah.
Who came up with Morrison? I mean, I think it's a great name because you kind of do look like John Morrison. Jim Morrison.
I made a list of names. And,
okay.
And that was literally my list of names was Jimmy Dean, Jim Morrison, and my names were combos of John Brando Morrison, Dean Brando Morrison.
Okay.
Brando Dean, and I same thing. I'm a big Doors fan, and I was thinking of how fun it would be to be a Morrison-esque type heel persona and say
idea.
Narcissistic poetry,
yeah.
I'm better than you, my existence is eternal type
saying
stuff.
That Jim Morrison poetry. What's the name of your finish again? Moonlight Drive?
Ed Moonlight Drive and Starship Pain. Yeah. And Moonlight Drive is a Doors song, actually.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. For the listeners who don't know.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you used it. And then when did you hook up with Miz? Was that around that time? Because Miz on ECW too.
Miz was on ECW at the time, but our paths never crossed at first. It was 2010, actually. By the
because that was good
that
too. You guys really did you come up with it yourself? Was it called Hollywood Minute? Was the name of your
the dirt sheet, our internet show? Yeah, we beat MVP and Matt Hardy for the tag titles, and when we did it, I think it was another moment where I think he was floating and he was really kind of sliding down the card and he was worried and I was kind of floating in a different area and I was I was worried that I was out of the IC title contention and they ended up putting us together and it worked really well. I think he just has a really strong personality.
Yeah.
And he's emphatically himself all the time and it gave me somebody to play off and I think we're different and similar in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
His abrasive, super loud, obnoxious energy, and I have kind of a more subtle, deadpan delivery, and we put those two together, and when we were on the same page, I think the chemistry was really interesting.
Was it your idea to say we want to do this talk show thing, Dirt Sheet?
Yeah, it's because I think both of us were tired of not getting promo time,
mm-hmm.
and you know what happens in the tag team division, you barely ever have time to cut mm-hmm. any promos. So at the time, basically the two of us were hey, let's do some sort of thing where we can be funny, and even if it's not on TV, at least we can get our personalities across.
Did it start out as an internet show?
Oh yeah, it was. I mean, we did. In ultimately, At the end of the day, I think we ended up having like 77 episodes of the Dirt Sheet, and almost all of them were online.
But you did some of them live, though. I remember
it was almost a full year after like we started doing it online that we finally had one live episode of the Dirt Sheet on TV, and then it went well, and we did like I think at the end of the day we had like maybe four or five different episodes of ECW or SmackDown where we did live Dirt Sheets.
You would just go out there and be smart asses. I remember one time I think you did like a Mystery Science Theater thing where you watched someone's, maybe the Hardys, some little childhood video that they had, or was that Ed and Christian? I can't remember.
It was the Hardys. We definitely did that for the Hardys.
That's right.
For like HBK and Triple H. We did one episode. Actually, I don't even know if you remember this. We did one episode. I think we were making fun of you, and it was the green room, like our talent relations office, was right next to pre-tapes that day.
Yeah.
And like I heard you in there talking to Carano, and Prof from pre-tapes kept yelling, "Quiet, quiet on the set," and I kept telling him, "No, let's just wait for Chris to get out of there because
he doesn't care
because we're about to make and then we did our little skit, and you walked in and you're like, "This is why you have to be quiet so you can mock me on your show." you didn't care though. You're cool.
No, man. I thought it was. I always enjoyed it when like guys like yourself would go and put something together to like you said. We need promo time. Let's get some.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think you can tell like, when people do that and they take like a kind of an ownership of their character and persona. I mean, you're a good example of that. Like you just have to make it happen. You did. You made it happen for yourself.
Well, I mean, my experience was in 96, 97 in WCW, I wasn't getting promo time. And they used to have this thing back in the day. It was called a box. And you'd go inside and do localized interviews. You know, we're coming to San Bernardino, Jericho versus Morrison. You know, get your tickets now. I'm going to kick your ass or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, next, you know, Manhattan, New York. Hey, we're coming to Manhattan, New York, and it's going to be Morrison versus Jericho. And you better watch out, you know, and that you would do like as many of them as you could. And I used to go sit in the back because we weren't doing anything during the day. You know how it is. And I had no promo time, but I thought maybe if I go watch somebody, you know, you're watching Sting and I'm watching Flair and I'm watching like all these, you know, great, even Rougeau's, like everybody could talk.
Right.
And just sit in the back. And then one day, I'll never forget this, Luger didn't come do his promos because he wanted to go tanning. So like, how about that guy back there? And I'm like, me? Is you want to do a couple of these, so I did two of them, and then that led to three of them, and that led to four, and then suddenly I'm on the list every week, and that's how I learned how to do promos and get that vibe, you know.
100%.
And you then, had to do that.
Yeah, and then the same thing that happened with the Dirt Sheet, sounds like it happened with you, where they're like, "Well, we need a promo. Like, that's Jericho. Right. Like, he can talk.
I don't know how to do a promo, so I'm going to make myself learn because if they give me a mic and I stink it out, I'm not going to get another chance."
Right.
So, I mean, you guys took the initiative to do that, and it worked.
Yeah, and then when it came time to like go, "Hey, we need a promo segment. We want to have something funny, and we want to plug the match, like Matt Hardy and Mark Henry versus Miz and Morrison. What do we do? Oh, let's do their internet show.
Right.
It's already there. We don't have to think of it. We know it's going to work.
Who did you enjoy working with?
You know, I found like most of the time, like by the time people get to Raw or SmackDown, they don't suck. I liked working Ziggler a lot. I liked working Miz. I feel like I learned a lot working Sheamus and like elevated my game. I liked working him a lot.
Sheamus is tough to work with, not in a bad way, but he's strong and he works hard. You got to fight when you're in there with him.
I think that helped me. Because
there was always one of the knocks against you that you weren't intense enough.
Yeah, exactly. Because the stuff that I liked to do was like a lot of times like pretty and aerial. And when I was wrestling Sheamus, like he hits you like you know, I was on a Europe tour with him and we wrestled every night. And like after a while, if you're getting hit hard by somebody, you're like, "You know what? I'm gonna hit you hard back."
Yeah.
And like it ended up like helping me a lot develop like a kind of like a sense of like I need to be hitting people a lot harder. And then after I stopped working him, I realized, you know what? I don't need to be hitting people this hard. Because people work differently, you know? And like,
sure.
You hit like Sheamus or Drew McIntyre in the head and they don't notice.
Exactly.
But you hit somebody else in the head that hard and they'll be like, "Hey, bro."
Or you make a save by dropping the point of your elbow into someone's face. It's like, dude, come on. So have you had any conversations with the WWE about going back? Or do you have an open door? Or how is it on that end?
You know what? Yes, and I think so, but you never know.
Right.
I've talked on and off to everybody from the office. I went to SummerSlam when they were in town and like caught up with everybody backstage. I watch wrestling whenever I can, and I actually like I can't wait to get back because I miss it and I watch it. But I also can't wait to get back because I still feel like I got Boone the Bounty Hunter to make, and I got all this stuff I'm running around trying to accomplish and finish before I do get back.
And you mentioned that you do some indie shows here and there.
Yeah, I mean I've been pretty selective on them. Like if it's a good payday and a good crew or like an interesting spot, like I'll take it. And also I try not to take too much because from the entertainment industry, like, how stuff happens where like, hey, if you're clear for like next week starting Wednesday, you have a guest spot on some TV show, or like you booked a role in a movie, but we need you like immediately next 3 weeks.
And that's exactly right.
If you have these wrestling bookings, like I never cancel wrestling bookings. I treat it like I'm booked. Like
right.
if I give somebody my word, I'll show up. So I can't like I try not to take bookings if I know I'm gonna like maybe have to cancel.
Did you work a match with Liger? Did you do a match just to work with him?
Yeah, I worked Liger in Jersey, like 2 days before Mania last year.
Oh, okay.
It was epic, man. That guy was, it was cool wrestling him because he's one of the guys that I remember like watching as a kid,
yeah.
Like growing up, and then like watching again when I was studying it as like a student in college when I was trying to figure out how to get into it, and he just did a bunch of stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, well, he was the pioneer.
We talked about some stuff, and He wanted to like go for everything. Like he hit his dive, he hit like his flippy twisty thing, and
top rope brainbuster.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
palm to the face. That
actually,
was a good one.
He must have took care of me. But it was cool wrestling with him because he definitely felt like I felt the Japan off him, which is hard to articulate any other way. But
yeah.
Like. He,
it's a certain style. He's a Japanese superstar, and he's got that certain style and vibe, very strong style.
And he knew right what to do, too. Like, yeah. The strong style, and, like, he just – I mean, I'm sure he knows, like, 2,000 different types of holds. And we were doing some, like, hold-to-hold chain wrestling stuff. It was just, like, I would do one thing, and then he would think of three different things, and then I would do another thing. And I felt pretty liberated to just try anything.
Well, he's a pro for sure. Last question. What's your favorite match of all time that you had?
Oof. It hasn't happened yet, brother.
Brother. I wouldn't have accepted that because you put brother at the end of it. That wins.
Classic, yeah.
I love I love the ones that you had with, we talked about Sheamus and Miz. Those were some really, really cool matches to have. So.
I mean, I could go through Rey Mysterio 2009, like him and me, I had a moment that I think defined me as a babyface. Like a couple Punk in Cincinnati, I think 2007, where he won the title off me. Miz, False Count Anywhere, the ladder match versus Sheamus. A couple matches I had on a Europe tour with Ziggler. Any one of those,
which is kind of later stages. Morrison before you left, like you were kind of coming into your own in that respect.
I thought those were my best matches.
Yeah.
And if you're going for like straight up, like, I mean, what means a lot, like Eminem debuting in a our first match was versus Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. In MSG, and we won the titles off those guys. And,
that was a great gimmick too.
It was everything just kind of like happened at once.
Yeah.
It was like Johnny Nitro got fired, sent back to OVW, and then Melina and Joey and me had been working on this gimmick, and like they wanted it, they didn't want it. They wanted to trade Joey for Chris Cage for a while.
Oh, wow.
They ended up taking all of us and putting us on the road. Then we worked Charlie Haas and Bob Holly on house shows for 3 months. And then we debuted and had that match. And I was like, oh, this is why I wanted to be a pro wrestler.
Yeah, that was a great tag team too, Eminem, man.
Yeah.
So Hercules, and this is the John Morrison's version of Hercules, the better one.
Yeah.
Boone the Bounty Hunter, we will be seeing that soon. And
one more plug for
absolutely.
Everyone listening still.
Please. Still. if you haven't left already. This is the end of my show. Thanks.
Well, you know, they see the podcast ending. For everybody listening, of course you're still listening.
Yes, of course. Riveted.
Check out Ghost Puncher. It's on my YouTube channel.
Oh, Ghost Puncher.
It's another sizzle trailer I made. Rowdy Piper's in there. Chemo, UFC fighter. Jay Huron, a very talented UFC fighter. Talented actress named Jackie Moore. And John Morrison, an MMA fighter who has a near-death experience that realizes he can punch ghosts. So it's on my YouTube channel, which is The Palace of Wisdom.
Palace of Wisdom on YouTube. Lots of great stuff going on. John Morrison, it's good to connect with you, man.
Yeah, absolutely,
man.
Thanks
for having
me.
Proud of all the stuff you're doing. It's great.
Dude, I'm glad you're doing this show, man. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun doing this and seeing you in person, too.
Thanks, dude.
Thanks to John Morrison for joining me today. Thanks to all of you for being here. Make sure you check out John's official YouTube page, The Palace of Wisdom. You can see some of his parkour stuff, some of his new shorts and film projects that he's working on. Very talented, very creative, very quirky guy. My new book coming out October 14th, The Best in the World, What I Have No Idea. I'm doing book signings once this leg of the Fozzy Tour wraps October 12th. Signings start on October 14th in New York City. You can check out all of the locations either on my Instagram or you can listen earlier in the show. And you know I wouldn't be doing this at all if not for you guys downloading two shows every week for twice a week. And also, if not for my Sexy Beat sponsors who help us pay for the production costs of doing this for you. And if you want to help support the show, easiest way to do that is your online shopping through Amazon links. Easy to find. Go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links in the UK, USA, and Canada. A, every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice. So we, no hidden fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you're helping me out in the process. All right. Thank you so much for joining me. I haven't played a Fozzy tune for a while, so let's just, before we go, check out No Good Way, the other song written by Johnny Andrews and Rich Ward besides Lights Go Out. Crank it up. This is the final tune of the day. Actually, the only tune of the day, and it's No Good Way.
I don't know why I survived. Spent days in the dark.
All right. Hope you enjoyed the tune. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks to John Morrison. That's it. Another edition of Talk is Jericho. In the meantime, and in between time, stay cool. We'll see you next week. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And on Friday, the Nerdist himself, host of Talking Dead, host of Midnight, my buddy, my boy, Chris Hardwick will be here. And what a discussion we have. If you like the Kevin Smith chat, you will love the Hardwick chat. Come on up on Friday. We'll see you then. Yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.